This is Jay Sekulow. President Trump wins the New Hampshire primary. The big question, what's next for Nikki Haley?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Well, I would say it was a long night in one sense, but in another very real sense, it was pretty quickly called. Yeah. You're shaking your head, Logan.
I turned it off by 7:10. I mean, I think Fox News was the only one that didn't call it at the minute. They're like, we should wait a little while. And by 7:20 or so, they had called it for Trump. And again, that went pretty quickly. And some of the numbers that have trickled in now, we know sort of how it all shook out. Very interesting night for sure.
Interesting. Donald Trump won by about 11%, which was fairly consistent with a lot of the polls. Some polls showed him, you know, much closer. There was initial polls 3 weeks ago showing that it was a 4-point race. Then there were some showing that Donald Trump was up by 16 or 17 points. Came in, it looks like it's going to come in at around 12%. It's a decisive win. What's interesting about that win is in New Hampshire, independents are allowed to vote. So of the Republicans that voted, Donald Trump got 75% of the vote. Nikki Haley got 25%. And then on the independents and undecideds or uncommitted, which Logan, you said was actually more.
Yeah, at least the number was last night. I have to find the exact number. But last night when they were reporting, they were saying that there was more voters who were either not registered as Republicans, registered as independents, or registered as Democrats and then switched or planned on voting for Biden, they said, you know, in the election. So I think what you had here was, you know, Nikki Haley's strategy somewhat worked in the sense that a lot of people who were not even Republican voters got out and voted.
Yeah.
It just wasn't enough.
No, it was not enough. And what's also interesting, this is the first time since 1976 on the Republican side where one of the Republican candidates won three consecutive New Hampshire primaries. Nixon won three, but it was in 1960, then again in 68 and 72.
It's also the first won both Iowa and New Hampshire back to back.
And a huge turnout.
Since then.
I mean, the turnout was a record in 2016. It was 287,000. 2020, 296,000, and which was the Democrats when they had a contested election. And 300,000 this time. So it was a big turnout. The delegate count is currently 3217. And the big question for Nikki Haley is kind of where do you go from here?
Yeah, we're going to break that down in the next segment. We got about just 2 minutes left in this segment. But coming up in the next one, we are going to tell you our thoughts on where Nikki Haley goes from here. There was a lot of push last night for her to drop out.
Yeah.
But we'll discuss that in the next segment.
No, we're also going to be, the back half of the program is going to be focusing on Israel. And let me give you an update on that, folks. Around the world, Jewish communities are in fear on a daily basis, and it's getting worse. It's the worst I've seen in my lifetime, and it's because based on the Hamas attacks and these kind of pro-Palestinian protests that are continuing, there's a false anti-Semitic narrative that is out there, and it is spreading like wildfire around Europe, in the United States, on college campuses, and it has to be stopped. So what we did was our team wants to spread the truth, but we need your help to do that. We've put together a factual multimedia primer on the true history of the Jewish homeland, Israel, and we'll tell the story of Hamas and its decades-long plan to destroy Israel. A lot of it's based on my book, Rise of ISIS. So we're going to ask you to go to aclj.org/defendisrael. That's aclj.org/defendisrael, and arm yourself with these facts and share this link on all of your social media platforms. Share it with your friends, family, neighbors, colleagues, churches, and share with your church leaders. We need you to help spread the truth about Israel. Also know that in our fight, we begin today, our team in Europe is meeting with leaders in Spain. They just finished meeting with leaders, including the Prime Minister in England. We just delivered our brief to over 50 nations involved in the International Court of Justice, but we must defend Israel. And frankly, these global legal battles, as you can imagine, are costly. You can join the fight to defend Israel by becoming an ACLJ champion. Make a monthly recurring donation at aclj.org/defendisrael. And Logan, we want people to share that link.
That's right. aclj.org/defendisrael. Take it, share it, text it. Be right back.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're spending the first two segments of the broadcast kind of analyzing what happens next. So Donald Trump wins New Hampshire. He already had won Iowa, beat Nikki Haley by about 11.5 points. Nikki Haley, if you were just watching the broadcast, know she says she's going, continuing on. So the question is, I think everybody's question is, what happens next for Nikki Haley? What, because in right now in South Carolina, she's down by 32 points in her home state, but she says she's going, Jordan.
Yep. Yeah, she says she's going. And listen, I mean, there's 50 delegates at stake there. It's also done by congressional district. So she'd have to have a sweep to even get close to where Donald Trump is right now, if you include that he's going to win all of the caucus votes in Nevada. So that's, he's up to about 58. So there's 50 delegates at stake in South Carolina. That, she's not going to be able to do that. She's not going to just sweep every single congressional district. As the polls show, every time a winner, like a Trump in this situation, goes from Iowa with a big win, New Hampshire to a double-digit win, that's where Nikki Haley put all of her money, all of her resources. She had all of the moderates. And guess what? That wasn't enough to overtake, even get close to beating Donald Trump. She didn't do the, I finished 1 or 2 points behind. She got trounced. Let's just be honest. It was another day where they called the vote immediately after the polls closed. So we're going to go into Nevada. She's not even competing. And now she's got to figure out, are donors really going to fund her these next few weeks to get her to South Carolina to try and pull off some victory that's never been done before in history to beat someone who has won both Iowa and New Hampshire? The person who's won Iowa and New Hampshire, and it's rare, has always gone on to become the party's nominee. So she'd have to be pulling off miracles. I think her speech last night, trying to get out ahead of things, I get the strategy there, but it was bizarre. I don't like how she attacked voters, demeaning voters both in Iowa and New Hampshire. And I think she was also, maybe didn't realize it, but demeaning a lot of voters in her home state of South Carolina who still support Donald Trump very strongly.
So here's the interesting thing. They called, Logan, how quick did they call it last night?
Everyone other than Fox called it at the moment. I'd say between
the polls closed at 7.
Yeah, 8 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah.
By 8:03, I think that everyone had called it except Fox, and they only waited till about 8:20. Okay. 8:25.
I know the New York Times and AP did it right away.
They did it immediately. And then Fox called it a strong lead, but they said they weren't ready to call it just yet. And then as soon as they got, I think, just the next tranche of data, it was over.
Yeah, Will said that it was the AP, New York Times, Wall Street Journal all called it as soon as the polls closed. So, but the question is, the difference between her and Ron DeSantis, you have to have two things to continue. You have to have a pathway, and then you have to have money to fund the pathway. Ron DeSantis looked at it and decided he had neither. He was out of money, we know that, and there wasn't a pathway. I don't see a pathway for her, but she still has, I think, like $85 million. So she's got money to spend. Jordan?
She does have money to spend, but again, you keep spending that money. You can't spend it all in South Carolina if you're going to compete on Super Tuesday. So she can't go spend $85 million. In South Carolina. I mean, she's going to be, again, she's got to have something ready for Super Tuesday if she thinks she can really win South Carolina. And here's the problem for her. She doesn't have the delegation of statewide elected leaders. The governor of South Carolina endorsed President Trump early, Henry McMaster. Senator Scott was on stage last night with President Trump. Senator Lindsey Graham endorsed Trump. Nancy Mace has now endorsed Trump.
John Cornyn so, last night. Not from South Carolina, but yeah.
So, and Nancy Mace is in Nikki Haley's home district, congressional district, outside Charleston. So, and they were very close, and she was with her early on, but she now sees the writing on the wall. It's that, again, you want to, it's not really in the best interest of the party, if that's what you care about, to just extend this to beat up on the guy who is definitely going to become the nominee. She's pulling some stunt here for the media, and you already saw it. Wall Street Journal even was talking about it. Nikki Haley's playing a move to see if Donald Trump gets sick or disqualified. I mean, that is just, that's not how you're supposed to go about this in politics. She already starting to sound like a sore loser. And instead of doing the gracious move in these next few days, which is kind of put yourself together, look at what's really available. You know, she came out strong last night and said, we're going hard. It'll be more embarrassing if in a week from now she has to realize she has to close up shop because the money starts drying up. Because $80 million is not going to get you South Carolina and get you onto Super Tuesday. It just won't happen.
Here's what Representative Nancy Mace from Nikki Haley's home district said, the congresswoman from South Carolina.
South Carolina is Trump country, and he is crushing it right now. And number one, I want to say that Nikki Haley ran a great race. She made it deep into the playoffs, but the playoffs are now over, and it's time to start the Super Bowl.
It was interesting. Even Ron McDaniel, the chairperson of the RNC, kind of said, you know, the handwriting, like Jorgensen, is on the wall. I do get the sense that they are waiting for some foreboding act to happen. That's what her team's thinking, some foreboding act, and legally, something that's going to be so dramatic that it's just going to say, oh, we can't do this. I will tell you that the disqualification, I'm holding some of those briefs in my hand right now. We're winning. I never say that, but I'm optimistic that we're going to carry the day at the Supreme Court of this and Supreme Court of the United States, and the president will not be removed from the ballot. There are the other cases that are pending. Most of those I don't think go to trial before, and I don't know if that has any factor, but she's clearly, you know, she's got to make a calculated decision. Do you want to lose in your home state?
No, you do not want to lose in your home state. It is the most embarrassing, I think. And actually, most candidates prevent that from happening. So we saw that with Jeb Bush. We saw it with Ron DeSantis. He decided, you know, listen, I have no path at all. I'm not going to win in South Carolina. Nevada is going to be a problem. And then I'm going to get to, you know, Super Tuesday, and I'm going to end up losing most of those states, including my own. So I've got two more years left as a governor. I can come back from this. Nikki Haley's a little different because she's out of office. But still, if you get if you're Donald Trump right now and you got the resources, what would I do? I would pour resources into South Carolina, not ridiculous spending for no reason, but to trounce her there, to embarrass the Haley campaign. Because if their strategy is, let's hope something bad happens to Donald Trump, let's destroy them in their own on their own turf by 30, 40 points, and she's done politically, maybe, for the rest of her career.
So here's the other question. You've got the Florida is part of Super – Florida's in the Super Tuesday group too, right? So Super Tuesday is when this year? March 5th?
Yeah.
This South Carolina is February 25th?
3rd.
4th. So you go. You can't just run in South Carolina because 9 days later, you have all the Super Tuesday states.
Right. So $80 million isn't enough. If you had $80 million to spend just in South Carolina,
yeah,
okay, maybe you could. That's one thing. But $80 million to spend in all of the Super Tuesday states, plus you're going to have to spend significant amount of money in your home state. The reason why it's your home state is because hopefully that's a state you don't have to spend so much in and you're going to easily win. But she's actually could lose the worst of all the states so far. She could do the worst in South Carolina. Maybe not as bad as she did in Iowa, but pretty close. I mean, so New Hampshire was her best bet. It was where there's lots of independents, a lot of crossover voters, and she wasn't able to get within a 10-point margin of the Trump victory. She came out early. I thought that coming out early was just trying to stop the bleeding so that she had time to figure out what to do next. And what she has to do next is figure out how to get that $80 million to $200 million to actually try and compete. But to me, again, this race was over in Iowa with that kind of win. We never saw anyone get to over 50%. We've never seen anyone win Iowa and New Hampshire and not get the nomination. All the legal stuff aside, which I think it is aside, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee at this point.
Yeah, I think that whether you like it or not, that's just the truth. And I want to take a couple minutes before we wrap up this segment, because next segment we're going to be diving in with Chris Mitchell talking about what's going on in Israel. And we have actually just launched a brand new resource for you, and I really want you to be the one to help spread the word on here. The website is aclj.org/defendisrael. We put together just a multimedia presentation. There's video content, there's text content, there's a whole breakdown video that you really need to see that we're going to play some of that later on about sort of the myth of the Palestine whole country and the situation with Israel. You need to watch it, really breaks it down, it really easy to understand. All you have to do is go to aclj.org/defendisrael and arm yourself with these facts. And I want you to share the link. So you're going to see that link, aclj.org/defendisrael. Text that to your friends. Put it on Facebook. Put it on X. Anyway, on Truth, however you share content with your friends, Do this today. Share it with your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues, and share with your church leaders as well. And if you have church Facebook groups, that kind of thing, we encourage you, get in there. Be a part of that conversation. We need you to help spread that word. We have begun meetings with key world leaders yesterday with the UK, today in Spain. So we need to defend Israel and be a part of this conversation, be a part of this movement. All you have to do is go to ACLJ.org/defendIsrael. While you're there, you can also become an ACLJ champion, which is someone who says, I want to put my money where my mouth is, support the ACLJ in a monthly recurring way. So again, you could do that. Go to ACLJ.org/defendIsrael. But the number one thing I'm going to ask you to do is just take that link after you've taken in the content yourself and share it, whether that's with your friends or whether that is, in the case said, in your Facebook groups, in your churches. Do that today. We'll be right back with Chris Mitchell.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. As you know, we've been working diligently on the situation with Israel. Our colleague, Kalev Myers, and our team from the European Center for Law and Justice have been in Great Britain. They are now on their way to Madrid. But we're being joined right now from Jerusalem with our good friend, senior reporter, bureau chief for CBN News in Jerusalem, Chris Mitchell. And Chris, thanks for being with us. And I know there's a lot going on. We got a lot to get to. But I first want to get your sense of kind of where the heartbeat of the population. I mean, we know on the hostages side, because we represent a lot of the families, but what's the sense right now, 109, 110 days into this conflict?
Well, Jay, it's affected each and every person here, almost indirectly, but also directly. I've talked to people where they say, you know, last week there were two of the soldiers. I knew them personally. There's not a person here from the north to the south, Jay and Jordan, and that hasn't been directly affected by this either. Maybe there's 200,000 Israelis right now that are refugees in their own country, about 100,000 in the north and the same amount down in the south. People know reservists is about 300,000 reservists that affects individual families and people that know people that were brutally raped or murdered on October 7th. Or hostages. I mean, this ripple effect throughout Israel is just dramatic, Jay. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's the worst pogrom since the Holocaust, and it's affected all of Israel.
There's the 60-day pause that was put forward by the Israeli War Cabinet. Hamas, I think, has now officially rejected it. What's been the reaction to that?
Well, I think some people have mixed feelings about that. First of all, I don't think some in the IDF want to lay down their arms as some right-wing politicians that feel the same way. They want the momentum to continue. Certainly, everybody wants the hostages released, but they want to be able to do the two goals that have been Israel's since the very beginning here is to eliminate Hamas and get all the hostages back. We'll see what happens. But right now, it looks like there's not going to be a deal anytime soon, but that could change anytime as well.
You visited some of the kibbutzim and the site of the Nova Music Festival. Describe to our audience what you're now seeing even 3 months later.
Well, you can still see all the damage and the devastation, Jay. This was Kfar Aza is a kibbutz right on the border of Gaza, about a mile away. And you could see actually where they came through on October 7th, about 6:30 in the morning. It's not only the devastation, but the stories you hear, Jay, of murder, sexual assault, just sort of horrific and barbaric stories of what happened to those people. We were briefed by the IDF during our visit down there, and it really brings it home exactly what happened there and why Israel is right now in the Gaza Strip. And also one other point, Jay, to be an eyewitness of that, to see it for yourself, it combats what's going on right now, not only online, but in social media in so many ways, denying October 7th. They're saying it's sort of like the Holocaust denial in real time and whether it goes on. That's why what you're doing with Defend Israel, giving people the facts and the information to defend Israel at this time, because it's getting solved by a misinformation and a media war online and other places.
Chris, you've been covering that region of the world for many, many decades. We've been friends for many, many decades. There's a lot of concern up north as well. with Hezbollah, because the lethality capability of Hezbollah is much more significant than Hamas. What's your sense there?
The sense that I have, Jay, right now is there's really no other way except to have some sort of a confrontation, a war with Hezbollah. Right now, there's been a low-scale war going on for a number of weeks since October 7th. But there's, as I said, about 100,000 Israelis that are literally refugees in their own country. Many of them may not go back. Many of them don't want to go back right now when you have what they call a monster on their northern border. As you said, Hezbollah is about 10, maybe 15 times the strength of Hamas. They have precision-guided rockets that could probably hit almost anywhere in Israel, and about maybe an arsenal of 150,000. So it, for people that I've talked to up north, don't see any way out from a war with Hezbollah to resolve what's been lurking on their border for now about 18 years.
One of the things that has been in the news a lot, both in the Israeli press and domestically here in the United States, but also in Europe, is the amount of devastation in Gaza. And of course, it's horrible, and everybody feels for that. And then the Israelis, IDF, said, the Israel Defense Forces spokesperson said, we think we've eliminated about 20-25% of the Hamas terrorists. But you see the amount of devastation and you see the number of 20-25 and realize that 75% of them still exist. This is where I think they're getting hurt in the world stage right now, in the imaging that's coming out.
It's very hard. I mean, when you look at the images coming out of the Gaza Strip, it's hard to, when you see the devastation and you see the number of people that have died tragically, it's hard to battle that in the world court of opinion. But I would say one thing, we talked to the Israel spokesman, Elon Levy, earlier this morning, and he was talking about the percentage of the ratio of combatants to civilians. It's about 1.5 to 1. That's about the lowest it has in any conflict in the last few decades, including Afghanistan and Iraq. So you have to put that in context.
Yep.
But it's a very hard sell sometimes for Israel to do this. But you also have to remember what Israel is doing at the risk of their own soldiers to put civilians out of harm's way. They send leaflets. Yep. They make phone calls. They send texts, millions of them, just to make sure that they get civilians out of harm's way. On the other hand, Hamas does everything they can to put their own people in harm's way for the propaganda value.
Last thing, Biden administration still trying to work towards a two-state solution. That seems to me to be a futile effort. What's your sense?
I think it's dead on arrival right now, Jay. And the reason for this is they want the Palestinian Authority to be that government, that two-state solution in Gaza. They have yet to condemn October 7th. In fact, they want to join forces with Hamas. So I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think there's any appetite for a two-state solution here in Israel. And it really is boggling sometimes. If you listen to what the Palestinian Authority is saying in Arabic and you try to make that a two-state solution, you wonder what the State Department is really trying to do here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Chris Mitchell from Jerusalem, CBN News, our good friend. Thanks, Chris, for your insight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jay.
And that really ties into everything we're doing right now. And a new site we just launched, ACLJ.org/defendisrael. You can see an amazing 6-7 minute video that really gives you a better understanding of the entire history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and really the true rightful original owners of that land and what that looks like. I think it's very informative, very interesting, and also will be very shareable for you to send to your friends who maybe have questions about this. Right now, all of it is available on aclj.org/defendisrael. You can arm yourself with the truth, with the facts, and again, the most important thing, because we have to be there, you have to share this. You have to share it with your friends. You have to share it with your colleagues. You have to share it with your church groups, with people who need to know. If anyone comes back at you, you have the resources now, whether it's through text or video or this landing page. You go to aclj.org/defendisrael. Today, we're meeting with world leaders. We're meeting with them yesterday. You can be a part of this as well by becoming an ACLJ champion. All you got to do is go to aclj.org/defendisrael. Let me know in the comments on Rumble and on YouTube if you are doing that right now. I really would appreciate it. Let me know in the comments. Again, aclj.org/defendisrael.
keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We started the program talking about what happened last night in New Hampshire. We're going to talk about that for a few minutes, but then we're going to also get right back to the situation in Israel. But we've got people that have called,
and they've been on the hold.
So let's go ahead and see if we can take those calls.
Let's go in order. Mary Ellen, Illinois, line one, you're up.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
Thank you. Yes, I just thought after yesterday you got me going on numbers. So last night I had seen that President Trump's numbers from 2016 to 20, and then now into, and this is all regarding New Hampshire, went up to like from 100,000 to 120,000, 170,000 voters. Like each time he did the primary or the caucus, whatever they call it in New Hampshire, his numbers went up. And then what was also real interesting was I had seen that...
Mary, let me jump in. Part of that is because there were only two people running. And so in the other ones, in 2016, there were, I think, 13 people on the ballot, six that were getting votes. So he got 168,000. Not to say that that's not a lot of votes. That's almost 170,000 votes. It's a lot of votes. But it was a different setup. So that's what you're seeing there. But it was a decisive win. There's no way you could shade that anything other than that. Let's go to Heidi, who's calling in Texas.
Hello, I wanted to respond to the callers that called in yesterday saying that they were Christians and for that reason they could not vote for Donald Trump because of his language. And I also am a Christian and I was a missionary overseas for almost a decade. But this is not an election for a pastor or a deacon or an elder of a church. This is an election for a president. And we need to elect the one that would be most capable. And our country is kind of falling off a cliff right now. If we were in a plane that was going down, we don't need the one that speaks the best and has the best language. We need the one that is most capable to keep the plane flying. And we need to keep our country going. And so that's why I encourage.
Well, look, we have in the Constitution, we have a no religious oath clause. I mean, you don't, you know, it's nice to have people to share your beliefs and values, but there's a no religious oath clause in the Constitution for a reason, and that is we don't say here you have to be this to be the president of the United States. Isn't that the King of England? So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, it's clear to me as we, you know, look, Donald Trump's going to be the nominee. I don't think there's, I mean, I can't imagine the scenario. Let's take Robin's call. Robin, you're on the air. From Nevada, you're the next state up.
Yes, I am, and I wish I could go to the caucus, but I have to work.
Okay.
My husband and I are both from Mass, New Hampshire. Now we live in Las Vegas.
Yep.
We feel like we've been Trump from day one. We continue to be Trump. We think that when Trump gets elected, people are going to let them be elected. But then the games are going to start. When he goes against Biden, that's when the shenanigans, it's going to be game on.
Well, I think, look, if you're worried about shenanigans, there have been a lot of things put in place to prevent election irregularities. It doesn't mean there won't be any, because that's just not the reality of the world we live in. There's things happen. But outcome determinative should not be the case. But he's also got to run, and you got to win Georgia. And by the way, winning Nevada would be very helpful, and winning Arizona would be helpful. This is a six-state race for the presidency. The Biden administration has already pivoted to, they've already got the T-shirts printed on running against Donald Trump. And what Donald Trump needs to do, in my view, is stop talking about Nikki Haley. Just go do the caucuses and the fights you got to do in the various states to get the number of folks you need to have, but delegates. But the fact of the matter is the attention should be on the other guy. That is Joe Biden. I think that's the pivot that should have been made last night. Logan?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we're heading into the next segment. We're going to move on from politics and move back into what's going on in Israel. Obviously, if you have questions or comments related to Israel, we'll be happy to take those as well. 1-800-684-3110. In the next segment, we're also going to show you a bit of the video that we just launched on aclj.org/defendisrael. And again, it's easy, it's shareable, it's right there. We need you to go to that website and do it. You may say, Logan, you've said this to me three times, I'm going to keep telling you, because that's how important this is today to do this. While you're there, you can become an ACLJ champion, but really what I'm asking for today is to take that link and send it to as many people as you can. aclj.org/defendisrael. Be right back.
Hey, welcome back. We said we're going to return our focus to Israel, and that's because our European Center for Law and Justice colleagues and our colleague Caleb Myers from Israel have been in England and are en route right now to Spain with hostage families, raising the issue of the hostages to keep it front and center. And they had very impressive meetings yesterday, Cece, with including the Prime Minister of Great Britain.
Absolutely. In the UK, they met with the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, the Security Secretary, and members from both Houses of Parliament, and had tremendous media coverage on all of those meetings. Very successful.
Yeah, it tells you that if you could keep the issue out there, that's going to help keep these hostages alive. We've known so much from our hostage work that keeping them in the forefront is how you keep them alive. We've done that on individual cases. We're doing that on cases where it's a mass number. Keeping it at the forefront.
Keeping it at the forefront, absolutely. That is the concern of everyone that we've had, even our, like you said, our clients. Their biggest concern is, don't let people forget me. And so we can't let people forget that there are still hostages being held by Hamas, and they're still there.
There's also a lot of myths about the whole Palestinian Authority and Palestinian state. I'm going to play for you a video we've just put together right now that, and you'll hear, those on radio, you better listen to it, that really lays out the real case and the real history of the Jewish state of Israel.
Occupation no more!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Occupation no more!
Occupation no more! Israel is a terror state!
Occupation no more! Occupation no more!
The myth of Palestine is a dangerous and false narrative being perpetuated by those who seek to harm the Jewish people. This narrative intentionally overlooks the thousands of years of history and the rightful ownership of the land by the Jewish people. It ignores the repeated attempts by Israel to make peace and the ongoing attacks and aggression from terrorist organizations like Hamas. We must not be deceived by this attempt to erase the Jewish people from their homeland. Following is the true history of Israel and the so-called Palestine. We begin with Israel beginning in 1800 BC. Abraham heard the call of God and followed it to the land between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River, the Promised Land. Shortly after, the Egyptians enslaved nearly all of the Israelites, and it wasn't until 500 years later that their descendants were able to return to the Promised Land. From then on, this region had a long history of conquest and power struggles, with Jerusalem at the center. From the time of King David's rule in 1004 BC to the Roman conquest in 63 BC, the city endured numerous shifts in power and the destruction and rebuilding of temples. 70 years later, the Romans drove nearly all Jews out of Israel, forcing them to scatter across the world. It wasn't until circa AD 136 the name Palestine first appeared, after the Romans named part of Judea, Syria, Palestina, to erase the Jewish presence in the land. Throughout the ensuing centuries, the region of Jerusalem continued to be subject to numerous conquests. In AD 638, Arab Muslims took control. Centuries later, Christian crusaders claimed the city, only to be defeated by Saladin, the Muslim Sultan of Egypt and Syria in AD 1187. The region then fell under the rule of the Ottoman Empire, Turks, in AD 1517, until 400 years later, when during the Great War in 1917, the British Empire conquered the region. The British made a public pledge, the Balfour Declaration, which aimed to establish a national home for the Jewish people in the area still known by the Roman name Palestine. Then in 1922, 4 years after the war ended, the League of Nations created the Mandate for Palestine to reconstitute a national home for the Jewish people. The region was redrawn into what is now modern-day Israel, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. Only 22% was left to create the Jewish state. Then, just over a decade later, from 1933 to 1945, the Nazi Party took power in Germany and massacred almost two-thirds of Europe's Jewish population. 6 million Jews. After World War II, in 1947, The United Nations adopted the Partition Resolution, a two-state solution to create another Arab state and a Jewish state in the remaining mandate territory reserved for the Jews. In order to have peace with their Arab neighbors, the Jews accepted, but the Arabs rejected it and invaded Israel, which began the Arab-Israeli War of 1948. No state of Palestine was created. The state of Israel was. Over the following decades, the Middle East was marked by ongoing conflicts between Israel and its Arab neighbors. In 1964, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, also known as the PLO, was founded, whose ultimate goal was the destruction of Israel. In 1967, the Six-Day War was waged by surrounding Arab countries. That's when the West Bank and the Gaza Strip became a part of Israel. Then the 1973 attack on Yom Kippur began. In 1987, the terrorist organization Hamas was founded by members of the Muslim Brotherhood. That same year, Hamas began waging jihad, holy war, during the First Intifada against Israel in order to wipe out all Jews. Between 1993 and 1995, Israel and the PLO made agreements for a peaceful resolution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. These agreements granted self-governance to the Arab populations of the Gaza Strip and West Bank in exchange for peace with Israel. Instead of peace, militants from the Gaza Strip and the West Bank continued their attacks against Israel. From 2000 to 2005, the Palestinians began a wave of terrorist attacks called the Second Intifada. Remember what this means: the eradication of Jews. So in 2005, yet another attempt to achieve peace was made, and Israel left Gaza, even though Gaza is a rightful part of Israel. In 2012, the UN General Assembly agreed to change the PLO's membership status at the UN from an observer organization to that of a non-member state with observer status. Observers generally have a limited ability to participate in the IGO, lacking the ability to vote or propose resolutions. Then, on October 7, 2023, the world was shaken by the horrific actions of Hamas as they launched a vicious attack on Israel. The death toll rose to over 1,300 innocent lives, including men, women, children, the elderly, and even infants. The atrocities committed by the attackers were unspeakable. Women were raped, dead bodies were desecrated, and over 240 people were taken hostage. What history clearly illustrates is that Israel did not steal any land from the Palestinians. In fact, there has never been a state of Palestine. The Romans gave the name to the area that includes modern-day Israel, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. This land was stolen from the Jewish people, just as it had been for millennia before. Learn more at aclj.org/defendisrael.
Folks, this powerful piece, those of you that are on radio, you heard it. I want you to see it. For those of you that were able to see it, this is a very powerful educational piece that in literally 7 minutes, we covered the history of Israel and explains it in accurate, factual information. So we know what's going on right now around the world. The anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel zealots are at their all-time fever pitch. I mean, I've never seen it in my lifetime the way it is right now. And it's happening, by the way, not just in the United States. This is all over the world. It's in our college campuses. It's in anywhere you go. This is a problem now. So our job here is to defend Israel, defend Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state, and to equip you with the information you need to help us do it. Many of you are ACLJ champions. Hey, champions, this is a call to duty here. We want you to share this link. We need to spread the truth of Israel's defense. So we want to defend Israel. You go to aclj.org/defendisrael. We put together this factual video. It's a part of a multimedia primer on the true history of the Jewish homeland. We tell the story of Hamas as you just heard it. And it's decades long. This has been going on for 40 years. They've been trying. It's been going on since the beginning of time. But it's been going on in our lifetime, really, since the 1948, the War of Independence. So here's what we need you to do. Go to aclj.org/defendisrael. That's aclj.org/defendisrael and arm yourself with these facts and share this link on all of your social media platforms. Share it with your friends, family, church members, neighbors, colleagues. Very important. We want you to spread the truth. And this goes for everybody that's watching, but especially our ACLJ champions. Hey, folks, we told you, you're an ACLJ champion. You got to report for duty. Here's reporting for duty. Share it with your friends. Share this link with your friends. You can join the fight to defend Israel by becoming an ACLJ champion if you're already not one, by making a monthly recurring donation at aclj.org/defendisrael. It's aclj.org/defendisrael. Look, we're already have notified 50 countries in this whole International Court of Justice case. There's going to be a lot more of that ahead. aclj.org/defendisrael. Back with more in a moment.
Welcome back to Secula. We want to continue this discussion as well, talk about our work going on currently in Europe.
All right, but let's talk about, before we get to the what our delegation's doing, talk about this campaign we're doing, Logan.
Sure.
I think it's really important for people to understand.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard me talk about it now. You've heard us talk about it this show. We just launched it. It's aclj.org/defendisrael. It has great, great content, whether it's excerpts from books, whether that is a great, you know, you just saw that video, 6-7 minute video. You can take that, easily share that instead of just, you know, clipping out this radio show. You can now just go to aclj.org/defendisrael. That has all of the details. It's very easy, very simple. While you're there, you can become an ACLJ champion as well and support the work financially of the ACLJ, but also you can get a free booklet called Unmasking Hamas. Again, all of that is available for free right now. aclj.org/defendisrael. And again, take that link and spread it wide. So share it, put it on social media pages, text it to your friends, send it to your pastor. If you have a Facebook group for your church, as long as they allow that kind of thing, post it in there. They make sure people get, you know, get the information, because it can get very muddy and it can get very hard to really even describe. It's a very intense topic. It's a topic that a lot of people don't know the information and decide to not learn about it. This is a great resource for them.
You know, it's interesting you said that, because there's so much disinformation there. What we're trying to do with this is really give you a concise understanding of what the myth of Palestine is, the Palestinian state, as it's called. It's a myth. There is no history supporting it. There's no legal justification for it. And obviously, as you saw, unfortunately, on October 7th, they're not even together in their own entities. So this is the reality. But I want you to understand what we have been working on since October 7th. Because you all are supporting the work of the ACLJ. And Cece and I went, the first delegation that came to the United States was the first one that left Israel to come to the United States. We hosted with Caleb Myers from Israel, a colleague of ours, and our team in Washington, D.C., that did a great job on this. We met with all of the House leaderships, Republican and Democrat, Senate leadership, Republican and Democrat. A lot of the leadership spent a lot of time with these families. And when you meet these families and you see the anguish in their eyes and what they're dealing with as their loved ones are held hostage. And unfortunately, a couple of the ones we represent, we now know have died. And I mean, one of them was right in our office when all of it was coming to fruition. It was really emotional, but we are trying to do everything we can to help these families and to help them get through this, but also to get these hostages released.
Absolutely, and we need to keep them front and center, not let anybody forget that there are still hostages being held by Hamas terrorists and just the horrors that are being done to them, that have been done to them. And like you said, when we bring the hostage families to these meetings, it really puts, it makes it real.
Yeah.
You see the moms that are just in anguish because they have lost their child. They don't know whether they're alive or dead, where they are. And, you know, we were really able to be very successful with those meetings, and they've been very successful in the UK and now going to Spain.
So they previously to that, they were in Brussels at the European Parliament with our European Center for Law and Justice team, led by Gregor Pupinik and Christoph. We have a great team there, and they did a magnificent job there, too. And now this week, so this is, you got to understand, we've been working on this since October 7th. So we had the big event in Washington, D.C. in November. Then we had the legal issues we had to get ready for in December, which was getting a brief to 50 countries, 50 nations in this International Court of Justice nonsense going after Israel as the genocide committers, the committing of genocide. It's absurd. We went through the legal arguments there, sent it to 50 nations, including the head of the UN. Then delegation just starting this week back in, just we're in January, back in the UK and now on to Madrid.
Yes. And it's been, again, like you said, again, very successful when they were in Strasbourg and when they were in Brussels. They had great meetings there with the European, you know, Parliament, and just keeping the hostages in front of world leaders is extremely important. And we've been very successful to do that.
You're going to see later in the week, we're going to play some video from the Prime Minister of Great Britain, who did a magnificent job in his defense of the Jewish state. And this was when our hostage families had just met with him. So a lot happening there. Let's go. We could take some phone calls too, Logan, as we're doing this.
Yep. Let's go to Cindy, who's calling in Texas on line one. Cindy, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for all you do, guys. Sure. Here's my question. I know it was mentioned that when I was listening yesterday that the leaders of Hamas might be allowed to go. They would take them to some other place. Yep. What I wanted to know is where would they go? We know Egypt doesn't want them. I don't believe Jordan or Saudi.
No.
Who would have taken them if they had agreed?
Qatar. They fund Hamas $1 million a week. It's a very strange relationship with the United States and Qatar because we also have our biggest military naval base in the region is housed in their country. And they're also the country that houses Hamas. And the idea was, this was kind of the tongue-in-cheek idea of, well, at least we'll be able to keep an eye on them, which obviously they did not. But that's where they would have gone. They live in luxury while their people live in squalor. Okay? I mean, that's just the reality of it. But Qatar, and we met with the ambassador of the United States from Qatar when we were in Washington, CC, and they come off very polished and we're trying to help. And listen, it's a very difficult relationship. You gotta maneuver it. You can't ignore it. It's like Netanyahu said yesterday, I'm gonna meet with anybody who's gonna be able to talk to somebody to get the hostages released. And we've taken the same position.
Yeah, and that it is very delicate when you're working in the Middle East, and it's just different cultures, different ideas. And like you said, with Qatar, it is. They have Hamas there, but yet they're trying to help negotiate to get the Israeli hostages released. And so it's kind of playing both sides of the field there.
I think the thing we have to realize, and Logan, this is by educating people on this point, which is what we're doing with this video, we're trying to people to understand the real narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that gets lost very easily. So we tried to condense it, give it to you with still a ton of detail and highly researched, really a true breakdown of all of it. You can watch it if you didn't catch the last segment. You can also easily share it in that. Plus, you have excerpts of books in there. You have a lot of great content. All you have to do is go to aclj.org/defendisrael. There's been this false narrative being presented. We want to help spread the truth. We need you to spread the truth.
We really do need our ACLJ members and champions to get involved in this, Logan.
Yeah, so we put together, again, a very factual multimedia presentation. It's very pleasant. Visually, you'll be able to share it. People will be able to actually see the content and not be surrounded by clutter and ads and all of those type of things. It's really easy. It's very simple. aclj.org/defendisrael. Arm yourself and then also get this content out there. Tell your friends about it today. If you have a way to do it, whether, again, that's sharing it in a Facebook group, sharing it in your church group, texting your pastor, whatever it would be, texting your friends, because we know we have seen these false narratives presented over and over and over, but you can be a part of helping fight for Israel. And in a situation where Hamas has won the PR war, I mean, that's at least for sure.
Yeah.
You can be a part of the response.
You know, that you'd say that they had won the PR war, and Cece and I were just shaking her head. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
It's true. And that's because a lot of the misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah.
So this video is extremely important that there is no state of Palestine. Probably a lot of people hearing my voice right now are shocked to hear that. There does not exist a state of Palestine. It is non-existent. So you need to share this video. The truth needs to get out.
So what we want you to do is go to aclj.org/defendisrael. And my ACLJ champions, there are 19,000 of you right now. If 19,000 people shared it today, just the champions shared it today, it would be phenomenal. Defend Israel, aclj.org/defendisrael, and become an ACLJ champion as well.